I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. Are you having fun yet? Are you feeling the buzz out of Philadelphia? Well, do you really have to be there? Joy and madness erupted from the floor last night when Dick Cheney finally pinned a name on the problem and said it was time for Bill Clinton to go and to take Al Gore with him. The Republican convention went nuts for long intervals of cheering and foot stamping. The emptiness of this convention has taken on a kind of critical mass. Sambas, pomp, circumstances, jokes about the minstrel show opening nights. Jokes like, who wants to marry a black Republican? Stuff like that. And now it comes to the acceptance speeches. Is there any there? Anything better than the grudge match of George Bush Sr. and the tacky hick in the White House who beat him in 1992, as Maureen Dowd put it in the New York Times yesterday? Will some thread of ideas or an agenda show up tonight in George W.'s big speech? What is it all about, Connection listeners? From Bubba to W., is there a map that gets you there? What's the direction? Are the Republicans kidding themselves about the powerful harmony of this convention, or have they found the way? Our phone is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about Republicans on the Connection phone at 1-800-423-TALK. Our guest by phone from Philadelphia was President Clinton's pollster and strategist, Dick Morris. His last book was The New Prince. Dick Morris, welcome back to The Connection.
Good.
I wonder sometimes if you're scripting the Bush campaign, too.
Well, I think that Bush is doing a great convention. I think that essentially he realizes that all of the Republican issues are gone because they've basically been solved by Clinton and the Republicans. Welfare, crime, deficit, the communism under Reagan, taxes are down. You can't plant a tree in that soil anymore. So I think what he's doing is he's saying, okay, now the Republican tree will be planted in soil formerly reserved for the Democrats, particularly on the issue of education, Social Security, health care, Medicare. And I think that he's doing a very good job of that. He has to redefine his party's ideology. And the minstrel nights, as you referred to them, I think are just what he needs to do. Sometimes I wonder if there's something wrong with my TV and I'm getting the Democratic convention, but that's just fine. You know, there are four parties in America, the presidential Democrats, the presidential Republicans, and then the congressional wing of each party. And what Bush is doing is he's clearly laying claim to the party of being a presidential Republican, which is to say a moderate, not an extremist, and that's what we've had in the White House from Republicans other than Reagan for a long time.
Is it not the Clinton playbook?
Yeah, sure it is. But the Clinton playbook, it's kind of in response to the Clinton playbook. Clinton took the Republican issues off the shelf because he basically realized the way to defang the party was to defang the problems that gave impetus to the frustration that empowered the party. And what Bush is now doing is he's responding to that and saying, okay, now I have to begin to take Democratic issues and solve them with Republican means. So I'll use tax credits, I'll use discipline, I'll use standards, I'll use independence of the unions to improve education. And that's a great pitch.
The thing came alive in a funny sort of way. I mean, a funny sort of life, too, but in the sort of raw meat attacks on Bill Clinton last night. How long will that go on, do you think?
Well, I think that there's a neat thing going on at the Republican convention that's kind of the opposite of what we did at the Democratic convention in 96. In 96, we did not want Jack Kemp to run for vice president. We wanted Newt Gingrich for vice president. So we forgot about Kemp, and we would always attack the Dole Gingrich, Dole Gingrich, Dole Gingrich. Well, the Republicans don't want Al Gore to run for president. They want Bill Clinton. So what they're doing is they're attacking Clinton, Gore, Clinton, Gore, Clinton, Gore. And just in a sense, as we made Gingrich the honorary candidate for vice president, they're making Clinton the honorary candidate for president. And that's a brilliant move because the first mission of any vice president is to escape the gravitational pull of the presidency. And it takes a long time to do it, and it's very hard. Nixon had a long time getting free of Eisenhower. Humphrey had it free of Johnson. Mondale free of the legacy of Carter. Bush free of Reagan. And by talking Clinton, Gore, Clinton, Gore, Clinton, Gore, they're hampering Gore from becoming a person in his own right, and Clinton is helping them by being on the stage when he should be asleep in the White House.
Is Gingrich gone forever? I mean, he's the completely forgotten man.
Yeah, I think he's into his next life, and I wish him well.
No, but I mean, have the Republicans shed all that?
I think that they largely have. I think Hillary will try to resurrect it in her race against Lazio, but I think it's kind of ancient history. I think the interesting point about this convention, other than its basic success, is how the Altacockers, the old guys, are fighting it out with one another. And as a result, all of their minions look like pawns. Bush Sr. fighting Bill Clinton, while Al Gore, Hillary Clinton, and George W. Bush look like also-rans. And I think that George Bush Sr. should go home to Kennebunkport. He sits up there in the balcony looking on benignly with Barbara like he's at a high school play watching his kid perform.
Speaking of George Bush Sr. and the balcony, would you stand by Jim, Dick Morris, our favorite dad at the Philadelphia Convention, is on the line? Are you there?
I heard those comments that he made there, because they get me patched in. He's going off already. But, you know, what can you expect from the man? When are they going to put us through here?
Is this you, Mr. President?
Hello?
Is this George Herbert Walker?
How are you? Is this Chris Lydon?
Right.
Hello, Yale?
Right.
Yale man.
Right. You were out of the loop, I thought. And there you are, chewing Bill Clinton up one side and down the other.
At least he didn't parachute into the hall.
Well, you know, I think I might have a go at that, but I don't think we need all the, you know, the kind of flash that you know, I mean, we're representing America, and I just want to sit back and enjoy it. But high school play? Geez, Mr. Morris.
What is all this bad feeling between you and President Clinton, Mr. President?
Well, you know, when I agreed to come on the program with you, I certainly didn't want to talk about that. We're trying to bury the issue. I'm going to stay out of the way.
Don't save all your good stuff for the Today Show. Give us some of it.
Well, I'll tell you, I think people who know me well and know the way I conducted myself against Mr. Dick Morris's fella there back in 92 and 96. I mean, that back in 92 would have to know how I feel about his... You're not going to get me to get a soundbite from me here, but just let me tell you that you're not going to hear me belittle.
Why not? Be yourself, Mr. President.
What a great job. So, my prescription is that you should go back to Kennebunkport, and you should let Junior be Junior.
Let Junior be Junior.
Yep.
I say instead of sending me home, we got to send your boy, your couple of boys there home to Texas. And where's the place? I guess it's New York now.
New York.
You know where
now,
he's
yeah.
from.
Yep. Well, I think that Clinton is belittling his wife by being on center stage. I think she then becomes the Mrs. And I think it's time for the last generation of politics to leave us and leave the stage to the current generation, because they're doing their current generation no good.
Well, I agree. But let me tell you this. You know, there's a certain grace with which I'd like to think that Barbara and I left the White House. And I do support the President of the United States because it's the office, not the man. And when I extended my hand and offered to help in matters, he could give me a call. My sleeves were rolled up. My hand was extended. But now my finger's starting to twitch, I'll tell you that. But you don't want to hear what I think of the man. You're not going to hear me call him a failed, philandering, whoremongering, hillbilly, saxophone-sucking former governor of a small southern state. That's not my style. Not going to do it.
Ever since Atwater left your side, it stopped seeing your style.
Well, you know, I tell you, I miss Lee.
So do I.
I miss jamming with him with the blues thing, the particular thing there. But
there we were talking to Dick Morris, and sounds so much like former President Bush there on the line. It gets rather nasty, Mr. President, if I may say.
Well, you know, sticks and stones, that's what they say. But my son, he's got the fire in the belly, and I think he's...
isn't that the problem? I mean, President Clinton, they're going to have at you guys for being sort of country club dynasts.
I gotta tell you, Chris, that for the opening minute of the interview, I was pretty sure that this was, you know, a put on, but I wasn't positive. I was careful about what I was saying.
Well, we should all be. But what I'm wondering is, you know, is there another round from President Clinton on this sort of, he says awful nasty things about, you know, when he gets real about sort of this Republican hand-me-down treasure?
I think Clinton was out of control at the start of it when he began slamming Bush, W. Bush, in the middle of the convention. I think that he was basically, he and his wife were just freaking out because the poll numbers are so bad. His wife's now 8 points behind Lazio. But then I think he got a rise out of President Bush, and in effect it became a good ricochet shot because he succeeded in luring President Bush into the commentary. And George W. opened the gate by putting Cheney on his ticket, because it's really his father's Oldsmobile. And by putting Cheney on the ticket, he sort of brought the father factor back. And W. has to escape President Bush's gravitational pull every bit as much as Hillary needs to escape Bill's and Gore needs to escape Clinton's.
No, I think that what the situation here is, so it's so nice to speak with you again. But let me just say that over the past several years, we have seen change, a change for new ideas, a change for new ideas and a new generation of leadership, and a break from the past and the old ideas and the old generation of leadership for a change into the new generation of leadership and new ideas. And I think Dick Morris knows this. And I think what George W. was trying to do was maybe select someone of his father's leadership that era. I mean, why else would he choose someone who looks like Helmut Kohl? I really don't know.
Mr. President,
you know,
this
I would
is so
to
sudden.
Update your repertoire. You better either be good at a Gore or a W.
Stand by. I mean, that's close enough to Bill Clinton for my taste. Mr. President, George W. H.W. Bush was just saying all the nasty things he wasn't going to say about you. I wonder, what is going to be your line on this kind of hand-me-down presidency, sort of the family heirloom in the Bush dynasty? How do you feel about that?
Well, I certainly support my vice president. I think that Al Gore has done a fine job. He has accomplished so much. During our administration, we gave him the job of reinventing government. Of course, you know, I saw him reinvent himself so many times, I said, have a try with the government. But I think he's going to be a good, formidable candidate. I think this race is going to tighten up. I don't know what Dick is thinking about that, but I think this is going to be a good, close race, and I think Al Gore will come through.
Is there a George Bush Sr. issue in the race?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think they've learned a lesson, that, and I have to just stay out of the way and let the boys play.
Chris, you know, I got to go in a minute, but I think that this election is patterned after 48, 60, 68, and 76, those elections.
48, 60, 68, and 76.
Oh, well, yeah, In all four of those elections,
you had a basically popular administration, and the challenger opened up way ahead. And then the incumbent party gradually gained back. Now, Truman won. Nixon in 60, Humphrey in 68, and Ford in 76 lost. But they were all photo finishes within 1 point. And I think what's happening here is basically the same. There's a popular incumbent party, but there's a feeling of a desire for change, because basically of a restlessness. And that's animating the challenger's candidacy, Bush's candidacy. But I think that Gore will come back just as Truman did in 48, just as Nixon did in 60, Humphrey did in 68, and Ford did in 76. Now, whether he'll go over the finish line or fall short is anybody's guess right now. But I think this is going to end up being a very close election. And if you want to see what patterns are at work, study those four other races.
Dick Morris, we do everything you say.
Thank you.
Seriously, it's a great pleasure to have you
good
on the program.
Good talking to you guys.
Dick Morris.
Oh, my gosh. I wish I had Dick Morris when I was running back in 60.
Oh, my God. All four of you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Mr. Nixon.
Yes. As you may well be aware, as well as your listeners out there, by all accounts, I am still deceased. But make no mistake about it, I am here in Philadelphia in spirit. And I think they're running a good campaign. Dick Cheney's a good man. I remember him when he was, well, I don't remember him, but he came into prominence, of course, the day I left in August of 74.
Was he there to vote on your departure, Mr. President?
Well, no.
I don't think he was.
He was not a congressman at the time. He was working for Gerald Ford. And he, in 74, became Jerry Ford's chief of staff at the ripe young age of 34. And let me say this, I certainly hope that Jerry is recovering well.
Mr. President, I don't know that they've mentioned you yet at the Philadelphia convention.
Don't hold your breath.
I haven't heard no Nixon banners or
I haven't heard
in the calling of the role.
Goldwater has not been mentioned. It's all Ronald Reagan, all Ronald Reagan.
How do we feel about that?
Well, let me put him on the phone. Ron? Well, hello? Yeah. Oh, huh? Am I still president? Hello? Oh, are we on the air? You know,
we are.
I started out in radio back then when I was... Well, I was known as Dutch Reagan back then. Of course, yes. This was probably before your time, Mr. Leidenberry.
Yes, this was Waterloo, Iowa, as I recall, baseball games.
Was Chicago Cubs at WHO in Des Moines, not far from your studio in Cambridge or Boston or... Wherever, but it's 90 miles from Fidel Castro, and we have to, I met with the Pope once, I did, I was up in Alaska, and I completely lost him in the snow, he was wearing that white robe, where did he go, Pope, here Pope, come on Pope, come on, here Pope, where is, oh, there he is, hello?
Yes, no, you're not president anymore, Mr. Reagan, but you're enormously popular at that convention in Philadelphia. It must warm a fellow's heart.
Enormous polyps? What?
No.
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't...
Oh, I say you're enormously popular at that Republican convention in Philadelphia.
Oh, yes, I saw Nancy sitting there receiving all of the accolades and God bless those Republicans. They are true American heroes. I must have had a different channel on the first night. I couldn't tune in the Republican convention. I saw a deaf comedy, something or other, some kind of a show, a minstrel show or something. But I saw Tuesday when Nancy was... Hello?
Yes, Mr. President. Yes, go ahead.
Yes. What was I talking about?
You're talking about Tuesday night at the convention and watching Nancy after the minstrel show.
Nancy's menstrual what?
No.
Show.
No.
Oh,
you know, listen.
No show business like show listen, business.
Mr. Reagan, hand the phone back to George Herbert Walker Bush, if you would.
He's got more middle names than that.
Yes.
George Herbert Walker, Griffith Joyner, Kersey, Cougar Mellencamp. I think there's Rodham in there as well. Rodham Bush.
This young lady would like to speak to whatever his name is. Our phone is 1-800-423-8255. The connection with almost any president you can name at the Philadelphia Convention. 1-800-423-TALK. Anna is on the line.
Oh, this is a high point of a very humid week. I wanted to ask George Bush Jr. if he can handle a Japanese state dinner a little bit better than his dad, if he can kind of hold down his sushi.
Is that for senior or junior?
Junior.
For junior. Is he there?
I tell you, I like my chances. I like my chances. I'm talking about, you know, peace, prosperity with purpose. And I like my chances, and I tell you, my wife Laura is going to be a good first lady, a good first lady. But I had sushi once. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was. They said it was yellowtail. I said I haven't had a good piece of yellowtail since college. I forget her name. But I went to Yale, too. I did.
You did everything Dad did, didn't you? You won World – no, you didn't World War
Baseball. I didn't go overseas, but I was in the service. And there are a lot of criticism now. But, you know, and Dick Cheney, he's a good man. He's a good man. Hmm. And, you know, all those votes on, what was it, the South African, you know, he was working with President Reagan on destructive engagement. Systematically denegregating their society was the way they wanted to go about it. Now, you might think, I don't just walk into a $1,000 plate dinner at a special interest group gathering and tell them what they want to hear. I have to be brief first. And, well, that's what Dick Cheney's for.
Anna, are you there? I wonder if he's answered your question. Anna hung up. Mr. Bush, whatever that tells you.
Well, I have a fellow here who wants some equal time.
Is that Dad, perhaps?
No, it's my opponent in the general election.
He's there with you. Let's hear him.
Well, you know, I just, you know, want to, for whatever reason, stop the man from distorting my record. You know, he says, I have always supported a woman's right to choose. I think you know that. I have always been strong. I continue to be strong. I am invincible. I am woman. Hear me roar. But, you know, there has been criticism. People say that I've always supported, a woman's right to choose, but I do, as you know, favor some form of parental notification when a girl is under the age of 14. I think we can lessen the devastating effect on the family if this notification were to come in the form of a singing telegram, perhaps. So I'm all for that.
Mr. Gore, you can't be serious. But then who knows what is. Would you just talk a little bit about the kind of personal stuff that hangs about this Republican convention in Philadelphia? It sounds as if they're just going to drag you through, you know, through Monica Gate, up one side and down the other.
Well, let them try. We'll have our chance in a couple of weeks.
How are you going to answer all this sort of character and decency stuff? Or are you just going to wave it off?
Well, we're having policy discussions on that now. I don't want to divulge any of our, but we've got some debates lined up after the convention that we're looking forward to. And, you know, I hope you're going to have me break character, basically, is what I'm hoping for, Chris.
Go for it, Jim. This is the amazing Morris duo, Dick the strategist, Jim the impressionist.
First time I've ever been on the air with another Morris.
Yeah, well, I think it could be, you fooled him, put it that way.
Yeah, oh, hey, at first, maybe. You know, I was walking around the convention last night, and there were actually people who recognized me who were on a cell phone at the time. Everybody's got a cell phone now. There were like two or three people last night who had me get on the phone as, you know, a famous politician with the person they were speaking with, which would have been entirely conceivable. You know, they're all there. You know, all the Republicans are there. So that's really bizarre. You know, I don't think I really fooled Dick Morris, but I fooled a few people back home talking to their, you know, folks at the convention. You know, oh, Mom, you won't believe me. Oh, I'm actually standing next to former President Bush. Sir, yeah, sure, I'll say. Hey, Barbara, I'll be right. Now, just wait. Hello? It was and who are you? Yes, that's right. And who are you, ma'am? Well, I help you support my son. Well, God bless you. Well, I like the job you're doing. I hope you get out there and thank you very much. I'll say hello to her for you.
There are no delegates to win there for George Bush Jr., but I suppose you could do it.
Right. No, I'm not trying to win delegates. I'm just here to soak it up. And the impression is definitely not second nature yet, so I have to work on it.
Jim Morris, you're our favorite impressionist by miles and miles and miles. Jim Morris grew up outside Boston, lives in Dallas now. You've done that Texas transition that the Bushes have done, and I noticed you've mastered all that confusion in George Bush Sr.'s voice between the Connecticut Yankee and the Texas Oil guy.
Well,
and George Jr. is a variation on the same thing, isn't he, voice-wise?
Yeah, I was living up in Connecticut before I moved to Texas, and I guess I knew who was going to be the next president, I guess. I had to work on a Texas accent as well. But I'm just kidding. I don't know who's going to win the election. It should be pretty close, and that's better for us, you know, journalists and political humorists, because hopefully the public will be focusing on what is happening in the country and will be turning away from this one-joke presidency, late-night monologue type. What passes for political humor is Clinton sex. And hopefully we can get beyond George W. Dumb, or drugs, you know, and Al Gore stiff. You know, at least now people are paying attention, they're reading the paper, and, you know, hopefully it'll be an issues-oriented campaign and administration.
What is your own Texas view of George W.?
Oh, pretty good. I think he's got a good chance. I do. I think that... You know, we actually Barney is also taped down there in Dallas, and I hear that Barney and the governor, they're doing a commercial to appeal to parents. Anyway, Chris, play along with me. It's a bit that I just wrote.
Always listen. The New York Times said this morning, you know, in a really strikingly interesting Man in the News profile of George W., that if small talk were an Olympic sport, he'd be a gold medal winner.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah. Have you engaged with him up close and personal?
No, I've only met him once. And I was sitting behind him on a plane, and I said, oh, by the way, I do a great impression of your father. And he said, let me see it. And I said, how are you? Good to see you. And he looked at me and said, I'm going to beat your brains in.
Jim Morris, stand by. This is The Connection, talking about Republicans at Philadelphia. Are you buying it? Are you enjoying it? Good politics? Good television? 1-800-423-TALK. This is The Connection. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com. From Boston University. I'm Christopher Ladd, and this is The Connection. We're getting ready for the George W. Bush acceptance speech at the Republican convention in Philadelphia tonight with our favorite political and any other kind of impressionist, Jim Morris, on the line. 1-800-423-8255 makes the Republican connection. John is on the line.
Hello?
John, welcome.
Yeah, how are you?
Good.
This is actually Deep Throat.
My word.
Yes. Does Richard Nixon know who I am?
Kitty Carlisle. I happen to think of, do you know who I, turn over all the cards. No.
John?
I don't know who you are.
we talked at some length with Leonard Garman yesterday, who says in his new book that it was John Sears, the political manager. Is that you, John?
Exactly. That's who I am.
It is you?
Yes.
My word. Do you have thoughts for President Nixon on this subject?
I wanted to,
why did you do it?
Well, I'm a saint. You know, I'm a patriot, and I was deeply disappointed. I was just disillusioned. I'm sorry, President Nixon. I just had to do it.
Well, there was a cancer in the... you are the malignancy you were trying to purge what I understand was a cancer in my, but you should have done it to my face. You should have said, Mr. President, don't burn the tapes. Just hide them in your jowls. They'll never find them there.
Mr. President, how many people did you suspect? We went through the roster yesterday. I mean, everybody from Henry Kissinger to Chuck Colson to, you know, Al Haig, all kinds of people were under suspicion.
I thought it might be Al, those shifty eyes. I thought it might be Al Haig. He used to sit there hour after hour watching Dr. Strangelove and Kane Mutiny, and he had these steel balls that he used to. He was very nervous, a chain smoker. And, of course, we saw later after Mr. Reagan was shot coming out that I am in control now. So we have to wonder. I wondered. I thought he might be Deep Throat.
Could it have been Henry Kissinger?
I don't think so. I think you're confusing that with his deep-throated voice. But I'm going to have to go now. I have to get back to my crypt.
Stand by for one more call, perhaps. 1-800-423-8255. Or 1-800-423-TALK. You scared the caller away, Mr. President.
Yeah, I understand you have other guests, and it's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Stand by for just one more. Solomon, okay. Solomon wants a word, Mr. President.
Hello.
Solomon, welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Great day for selling hamburgers. Listen, I was curious how Bush is going to explain away the state of Texas joint legislator. Senate and House passed a bill that would create a commission to handle the money for indigent people insofar as getting lawyers for them in a proper manner instead of the way it's being handled now by sheriffs who have screwed up the thing something fierce, and that's why so many people are rotting in prison there in Texas and never will see the light of day.
Well, you see, they don't rot in our prisons. We do away with them before they can rot. You know, you can't cook spoiled meat. But basically, I just stick to the script: compassionate conservatism, faith-based executions. We want to usher in the responsibility era. American dream touches every will and heart. Make sure that no child's behind is left untouched, and rally the armies of compassion that exists in every community, in every town, and every state in this land.
You said faith-based executions?
I'm sorry, I meant free-based. Faith, that's right. Faith-based institutions. Got to stick to the script here. Appeal to our better angels, not our darker impulses. And that's why we're going to win, because the American people want that kind of a change.
Well, let's hope.
It doesn't matter whether we're black or Asian or Hispanic or others on the fringe, including women. We're all Americans, and we all deserve a piece of that pie.
Norm is on the line. Hello, Norm.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I would like to say you asked if I'm buying it, the GOP entourage here they're doing or whatever. I'm not buying it, sir.
Montourage, that's a new one. Go ahead.
Let me just say this. I think that they are more afraid of Pat Buchanan than what they're letting on. And here's why. They're insulting the Christian base that has financed, worked for, handed out pamphlets for, and built that party up. And I know this. I moved to Massachusetts here, and you can probably tell I'm not originally from here. And I see that they have the same agenda as the Democrat Party, which is very strong here. And so I think that they're for this free trade. Pat Buchanan wants to close that off, reassert our integrity of our border laws. You have all those illegal aliens coming across from Mexico into George Bush's Texas, by the way.
Hmm.
And so a lot of his cronies benefit from that. And then lastly here, I would like to ask your guest, do you have an in with the Bush family?
Do I have an in for them?
No, an in with them. Yeah, in with them.
Could you
ask them a question for me? Or relay a question here. What do you think of, we know about MSNBC aired accusations by Juanita Broderick about rape against Bill Clinton?
Mm-hmm.
What are they saying about the accusations against Dick Cheney by Kathy O'Brien? That's my question that you could pass along.
Oh, yes. I will be seeing Dick Cheney today, and that's the first thing I will ask him about. No, are you kidding? What is this, a rumor? I haven't heard it.
I think it was somebody doing an impression of you doing an impression of somebody. Jim Morris, I'm not
sure. Was this man a newsman or something?
No, he was a...
Was it Tom Brokaw actually delivering a lengthy litany of charges that might be levied?
I don't think so.
Or allegations?
Or Laura Forana. Stand by. Yvette
Wants a Word with you, Jim Morris. Yvette, welcome.
Hi, thank you. This is a wonderful show, and I've enjoyed your guest's humor for a long time. What I wanted to know is how...
Since about 10:08 a.m.
How does the guest and the candidates and former presidents feel about the shadow convention going on in Philadelphia right now?
That's interesting. No, I'll tell you how I feel about it. I think it's healthy to have an alternative. I don't know how it's been going over there because I haven't spent much time there, but I did perform.
You've been performing there, right?
I performed there last night and the night before for Ariana and her minions, and very nice. I mean, a totally different crowd. It looked like a tapestry, a patchwork of America out there, as opposed to the floor of the convention.
Yeah.
It's great. A lot of interesting people are speaking there and performing, and I enjoyed it.
Could I interrupt you? H. Ross is on the line and wants a word. H. Ross, welcome.
Hello, you there, Chris?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Well, performing is the key word there. That's what all's happening here is just performing. You see, we got politicians doing comedy, we got comedians doing politics, and when these two get through fighting with each other, you know, I tell you what, right offhand, we're never going to have a president whose name rhymes with Boar. We ain't going to have one with the middle name W. And when these two get through fighting it all out, there's going to be a dark horse emerging, and I can't think of that as right offhand, but I think you can figure out who that might be.
Are you ready, sir?
Oh, I'm so ready. I tell you what, you better hope that giant sucking sound you hear isn't all your political comedy going south of the border, if you know what I mean.
That's funny.
And I got to go now. I got to take care of my minions and my millions, and I got a lot of things on the line here, so I got to drop off now. But
do you want to hear from your old nemesis, former President Bush?
I like talking to George Sr.
Hey, wait a second.
Yeah.
You know, you're really over the line this time. You're stepping on my, you're raining on my boy's parade here.
You guys in your Ivy League stripy ties and all that stuff going out there, W, whatever it is up in there in Boston, you know, where a lot of people talk funny up there, you know. I mean,
well, wait a second. You know, this fella here, this Perot fella, he's completely out of touch. He's a billionaire. He wants to be president. He's out of touch with the common, average, everyday millionaires who've been running our country for years. Now, I gotta go, Ross and Chris. I gotta run now.
But it's been nice talking with you, and give Barb a hug for me. I'll take care. Bye.
Ross, right. Thank you.
Who is that, Ross Perot?
I can only assume.
Geez, why don't we get him to start hurling insults at Mr. Clinton so that I can go up to Kennebunkport? Anyway, it is good. Sorry.
Jim.
I really have to run. I've
it's
got
a pleasure.
To get to.
It's a great pleasure, Jim. We love your work. We love you straight. We love you in all your...
You love me gay? Would you love me gay?
We love you in all your wonderful colors.
Thank you.
We leave it all to you. Jim, thank you.
Thank you very much. It's nice talking with you, as always.
Put your hands together, Connection listeners, for the great Jim Morris. 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. Are you watching this Republican convention? A lot of people aren't, and yet it has finally achieved buzz. 1-800-423-8255. Chester is on the line.
Hi. Your guest is hilarious, I must say.
An equal opportunity offender. None of those jokes to be taken seriously about them or us or anything.
I take very little seriously.
That's the spirit.
certainly not him. Other than, you know, it's interesting to hear somebody else's comments on what's going on, because, you know, there's a bunch of scary people out there, I think. You know, you asked if we took the your listeners took the Republican convention seriously, and I can't.
Why not, Chester? Be the reviewer here on political grounds, TV grounds, showmanship.
On TV grounds, it's, you know, it's a wonderful media circus. I've watched a half an hour of it spread over 3 days so far, because it's every time I watch it, I'm just turned off by the fact that there's really nothing happening there. But Dick Cheney's speech was kind of scary. I'm not a Dick Cheney fan. I'm not a Republican fan, and this particular group of Republicans scares me more than most.
What's left to scare people in this campaign?
Well, if the American public can really buy two Texas oil millionaires and two Yaleys as a diverse ticket, then I'm afraid for the whole political process. I really am. Mm-hmm. You know, and here I'm serious. I just, you know, they're it's wrong. You know, I mean, there's no diversity here. There's no effort to even speak to the American people, almost none of whom are Texas oil millionaires or Yaleys, and that's what we've got. And, you know, I guess that's really all.
Well,
I have to say.
No, it is not diverse. No, it is not diverse, but is it scary?
Yes, really? It is, because they appear to me to have been the hidden power in America for at least the last 20 years, perhaps the last 30 years, and that they are surfacing so blatantly as at the top of the Republican ticket this time around is either incredible arrogance or incredible hubris, and I really just hope it's hubris.
Let's hope. Don't panic, George. Chester, I don't think it's all that scary. We'll see. 1-800-423-8255, the Republican connection. Lynn is on the line.
Hi.
Hello, Lynn.
Yeah, hi. This is Lynn from Gloucester. One thing I had heard yesterday on BUR, I can't remember, I'm sorry to say, which show it was. It may have been one of the afternoon shows, that in fact, when the convention or the session at the moment is gaveled in and then at the end is gaveled out, as I guess everyone knows, there is no real gavel. It's electronic, digitized electronic gavel. I was wondering if anyone else had heard that or if I was dreaming this. And I guess I was just flabbergasted by it. Is this a metaphor for how unreal the entire convention is and what it represents in terms of American life, or is it very definitely real and reflecting it? And I'll take my comment off the air.
Lynn, I don't know that there is an answer. I would have thought the gavel was the last thing they would have lost just for sentiment's sake. Can you take a roll call without a gavel? I don't know. But it's theater, not politics. I don't have an answer. 1-800-423-8255 makes the Republicans connection. Adair is on the line.
Yes, Chris.
Welcome, Adair.
My main issue is that the Republicans all week have been presenting this multicultural view of themselves, and
I think
the American public is not going to buy that. What I found very interesting is that...
Adair, you know, we've been making fun of about it, but could I just ask, I mean, I've been wondering myself, what if they meant it? What if they really... What if Colin Powell is going to be the Secretary of State? What if George Bush is different?
Bush is different. I think there was also that in the policies, meaning that George Bush would have spoken out concerning the issue of the flag. He would have taken a position on that. He would have made the issue of affirmative action a part of his platform. And I think that for the Republicans to go about all week and put the Christian coalition to the side and try to quell the hush the voices within the party is really not a true reflection of what is really going on. I think it's very duplicit.
Remember, John Mitchell used to say, "Watch what we do, not what we say."
Absolutely.
What if George Bush, in his staff, in his politics, actually becomes multicultural? I want to give him that opportunity. I mean, I want to wait and see.
Really, I'm going to wait to see tonight what he has to say. And I really want to know if he will continue upon the continue with the policies of Clinton Gore in terms of having an administration that looks like America. So I want to hear him say that tonight.
Adair, thank you. 1-800-423-8255. Dawn is on the line.
Hi.
Hello, Dawn.
How you doing?
Good.
Being an Irish woman living in America and experiencing my first presidential election, I got a couple of points. Scary people is what I would say when I look at the Congress right now. The fact that they are using every possible media influence to get their point ahead, the Roe versus Wade. There's people saying that, you know, if these guys get into government, they're going to, like, overthrow this. This is a big issue for a lot of women.
Mm-hmm.
But also, well, I noticed that when Bush's wife was speaking at the end of her speech, when she was on stage, she was very deliberate in getting an African-American child beside her in the last shot.
Yes.
And I thought that was so deliberate. And so obviously these people have an alternative agenda. They're just trying to push the fact that they are the wannabes and they're going to do good for everybody. But, you know, they're trying to get to the minorities right now, the Hispanics, the African-American voters. And I just think they're scary. And Ronald Reagan and Maggie Thatcher come to mind. And if they get into government, I just don't think I'll stay here.
Well, they've been in a long time, both the Thatchers and the Reagans.
And I think if Bush gets into government, we are going to see huge problems socially. Yes, he's going to have a huge tax break, but what's that going to do to the economy? And they're talking about education and putting all this money into education. What they need to do is basically stand back and look at the teachers and how they're being trained and maybe start going back to the grassroots, as they call it. But
Don, thank you. 1-800-423-8255. Mark Jerkowitz is on the line, the media correspondent for the Boston Globe. Mark, is this a bigger story in the media than any place else? All the TV reports are nobody's watching this stuff.
Yep, you know.
Everybody you and I know is, but what does it tell you?
Well, you know, I mean, I think in some ways, certainly it's hard to watch this stuff because it's hard to find this stuff. I mean, the amazing thing really when you look this week is how little coverage there is on primetime network television. And they've fundamentally made a decision that they just can't get enough viewers for this anymore. They'd rather put Big Brother or Survivor on, or even a rerun of The Third Watch on NBC on Monday night, which actually beat beat convention coverage. Now, there is a self-fulfilling prophecy aspect to this. Yes, it's true that these conventions don't hold suspense in any of the orthodox ways that we used to think of. There are no extra ballots. There are no, vice presidential surprises. And these days, frankly, there's no misbehavior among the delegates. No open, bones of contention, no floor fights, no dueling ideologies and evidence. As I said in my piece today, so far the most interesting debate that's happened in Republican conventions is when Wolf Blitzer managed to get The Rock, the WWF wrestler who introduced Denny Hastert last night, to debate L. Brent Bozell about whether there's too much sex or violence in professional wrestling. I mean, that's about it as far as, cracks in the unity facade here. So on that level, it certainly doesn't make for good television. However, I will say this about the conventions, and I think tonight's an important night. George Bush introduces himself really to the country for the first time. We've got a funny election season. It's already August. It's clear people have not focused in on it. We've got Olympics coming up. We've got a World Series coming up. There may only be two or three times between now and November where the American public is going to pay attention to this race. One of them presumably will be the first, maybe the second, and maybe even the third debate. One is when a vice presidential nominee is picked, and the other one is when the candidates get together and make their address at the convention. So given the small window that we have in what seem to be these endlessly long conventions, we better take our measure of these guys now. And for that reason alone, there's value to this.
So what do we listen for tonight?
I think what you listen for tonight and what I'd be listening for if I'm one of these, independent voters that's going to decide this election is I get the tone and the tenor of this Republican convention.
But I'm speaking very specifically of W here.
I understand that. And the tone and the tenor is it's the happy face of conservatism. It's compassionate conservatism. That's the feel. That's the fuzz that we've gotten so far. This guy tonight, I mean, not only does he have to pass the basic competency test, and there's always a question about whether a few Bushisms will spring into the, but he's got to dress up all this sort of this flavoring with some very specific ideas about where he's taking the country. I mean, I've listened to your last couple of callers. They all sort of say the same thing. Well, these guys say they're different. They want to be inclusive. What does that mean? That's what George W. Bush has to tell us tonight. What does it mean? How will it manifest itself? And if this is the speech tonight is all about tone and not about substance, really, then I think everybody has a right to walk away from this convention who may be undecided, still scratching their head about the intentions of this party.
Mark Jerkowitz, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
As always. And thanks also to the Morris Boys, Jim and Dick. Jim the Impressionist, Dick the Strategist. Listeners, you can continue the Republican conversation on our website at theconnection.org. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.
PRI, Public Radio International.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Fleet, sponsoring Commonwealth Shakespeare Company's The Tempest, presented on Boston Common now through August 13th. CommonwealthShakespeare.org. And the Museum of Fine Arts, celebrating turn-of-the-century Holland with Van Gogh.